Yeah, that's right. Another one bites the dust.
Freddie Mercury couldn't have said it better than anybody else.
Nope. Another coach bites the dust.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play podcast. Still NRL, obviously. I mean, it was round 10 of the NRL. There's a few sports hopefully coming back soon in the NBA and that, but this week's all NRL.
Is there?
Wow. Oh, man. Well, it's just hopefully. Let's say hopefully. The start on the first game. The first game was the Roosters and the Raiders, actually. Yeah, the first game was at Sydney Cricket Ground. I thought I had to quickly look again. I just forgot. Yeah, that is the Sydney Cricket Ground.
It just seems so long ago that happened.
But the Raiders had a really good game, got over the Roosters 24-20. It was.
Is that a little bit? I don't know. You take the result with a grain of salt. Like I think it was just a bit of an anomaly. I think the Roosters' extremely poor handling. This is 3 weeks in a row now. Actually, come back to bite them in the ass this week and actually lost.
Yeah, you're right. But I mean, teams have got to capitalize on that, which Canberra did.
No, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
They were very, very poor with the ball, or holding the ball, I should say.
Oh, 66%. Like this is the third week in a row they've been under 70. Like there's going to be a team out there, and then this it just so happened to be a grand final rematch, and you know, Canberra had a little bit of a chip on the shoulder. And even though it didn't sort of really show in the first half, apart from the early onset, you know, Canberra's got first blood in that game, and yeah, the Roosters sort of eventually got going throughout that first half with a Brett Morris double.
Yeah.
And then it just they sort of frustrated Canberra a little bit, I think, in that first half, and then yeah, I don't know what Ricky said to him in the second half, but woof, boy, the Roosters looked like, especially in the first 10 to 15 minutes of the half, they just imploded.
Yeah.
I'd say
the first 10 and then even that last 10. I mean, they just couldn't hold the ball. It was ridiculous how many when they do that last 10 mistakes, and like it was like every minute they just couldn't hold the ball, or they were just they weren't really playing catch up, of course, but they weren't playing. I don't know why they couldn't hold the ball at all. They were having like brain explosions. The Morris boys were having brain explosions. It was
They're generally not playing from behind.
No, that's
that
true.
late in the game. So that it's always going to come into it. You know, that poise and that little bit of execution that come into it, and they just couldn't really sort of hold their nerve at the end of the game. Like, you know, so I mean, it pretty much started with that Croker try. You know, it was 43rd minute. Third minute into the second half, and just a ridiculous penalty on Jack White. Like, he got absolutely smoked after he kicked the ball, and it was just such a dumb penalty to give away by the Roosters. And Canberra, like you said, Canberra capitalized on it.
Yeah.
And that's what they've got to do. I'm not really just buying into too much with Canberra at the moment. Like, yes, they played terrific this week. I think in the long term, with no Josh Hodgson there, I think it's going to be to their detriment. But Josh Papali was just an absolute monster again.
Yeah, oh, he was brilliant. Like that, we were talking about with other people, just when we were talking about Queensland and New South Wales sides. And, you know, obviously, I am a New South Welshman, so I was saying, you know, we do have a very strong side and a depth, but then to Papali play that game, I went, oh, Jesus Christ.
Papali, he would be one of your first players picked.
100%.
For the Queensland side, at this point in time.
Easily. I couldn't think of, I mean, in this point of time, I think he's your first pick. I mean, you probably, yes, okay, let's Cherry Evans and all that, but he's easily, to me, your first pick. He's been so consistent this year. Out of everybody that I've seen,
he's just been a machine. Like it just doesn't stop. Like, especially the move from that edge sort of back row into prop. Yeah. You know, I don't know what they're feeding him down there, but he just it just looks like he's getting bigger and bigger every week.
Whatever they're feeding it to, it must go to his legs a fair bit, because those legs are the biggest legs I've still ever seen.
Oh, yeah, no, he's yeah. I think we referenced a little bit of Saquon's Barkley last week. You know, he'd be rivaling him. He'd be rivaling him too.
What'd you think of Silva Havali in the hooker there? Obviously in the place of Josh Hodgson, a bulky guy for hooker.
Yeah, no, he is. He's a solid sort of unit. Look, he's been around for a while now. Like, even though he hasn't got that many first grade games under his belt, he's been around for a long time and he's been with a few teams. So he's gonna be solid there. Like, he's not gonna provide that attacking spark. And the eyes, you know, what I'd sort of like to call the eyes front kind of dummy half. Like, he's more of an eyes sideways and just give you a good solid service, which I think in the long run could possibly be to Canberra's detriment not have somebody who's going to be taking on the line and just to make it, you know, just to make your markers work a bit harder. And, you know, those middle forwards make them work a bit harder as well if he's just going to be looking to pass straight out of dummy half all the time.
I guess the good thing with well, that's not the good thing, because I mean, Josh Hodgson is a great player, but I did notice in the absence of Josh Hodgson, Jack Whiten played a lot better. I was calling it because he wanted the ball more or what, but he seemed to play a lot better in that game at least.
Well, that's what he's got. He's got to take on the line like he did in this game. Like, he's really got to step up. Like, that's his biggest. Yeah, that's his biggest attribute to and his best quality to this team is the running game.
Yeah.
And that's what he needs to do. You know, he needs to let George Williams do a lot more of the sort of creative kicking. And not to say that he's got a bad kicking game. Like, he's got a good solid kicking game, but he's most dangerous. You know, he's like Ben Hunt in that regard, where he's better taking on the line. Like Michael Morgan as well. Like, you know, they've got solid kicking games, but they are so much more dangerous when they're taking on the line. Anthony Milford's another one. When they take on the line, especially on a tied line of defense, then there's so much more quality you can get out of them rather than just a simple solid kicking game.
On the back of Roosters, but like you said, it's a bit taking a bit of grain and salt. They are depleted and then depleted again. To Angus Crichton's out, so they. You know, they, I mean, Roosters being depleted is completely different.
I really think this is going to hurt them in the long run. Like, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of the Roosters going around, and I don't think I could handle a Roosters three-peat at the end of the year. Could. But the injury toll with them is mounting, and it's not so much, you know, super key players, but it's just, I think it's going to take its toll eventually. I think because if a lot of them are long-term injuries, then they could be in a little bit of trouble. If they can't get the decent sort of dummy half play and good go forward, then it essentially nullifies Flanagan and Keary.
Amazingly, they have 300,000 still in their cap too. If they wanted to get they do have 300,000 in their cap still. If they want to get someone from overseas,
300,000 yen.
Indonesian
rupiah.
This was confirmed on NRL 360 that they had 300,000 in the coffers.
They shouldn't have 300,000 cents under the salary cap.
Well, they do. So, like, if one person that probably is overseas right now in the Super League that may want to come over, I'm not going to say any names.
Good God.
I
don't want to see him with any jersey that's got NRL on it. Like,
I don't know. I'm not going to say who, but they do have 300,000. So
he's not going to take no $300,000. That is a gigantic pay cut.
But
He ain't coming over here for 300 grand. Give me a break.
We're talking about Sonny Bill Williams here. This is 300,000 for the rest of the year. That's it. That's like, you know, that's quarter of a season. So I don't know. They've got a few forwards out, so who knows? But good win by Canberra. Irregardless, it was a great win by Canberra.
Yeah. No, they're terrific.
next game on Friday, and then this is, it seems to be a carry on from a few games that we're going to talk about here. What, just the scoreline. Storm, look, obliterated the Titans.
Man, there was a couple of there was three decent beatdowns this week.
It was. There's probably not much to say about this game. It was just clinical by Melbourne. They were first game at Sunny Coast, by the way, Sunshine Coast Stadium, which doesn't look too bad.
No, yeah, it looked nice. I was listening to it on the radio on the drive home from work, and a text message come through to the ABC saying, "What's up with the non-socially distanced crowd on the hill?"
Queensland don't have to at the moment.
Oh, not so much that you don't have to, but you know, I think that there should have been, I don't know, there should have been a little bit more distance between people sitting on the hill there.
On that hill, it was. It's not a game that's had to go in 2 months. It was just Melbourne very clinical against a very not depleted, just a very poor Gold Coast side. There's really not much else to say.
For them to be 18, you know, only 18-6 down at halftime, was admirable. Considering the amount of possession that the Gold Coast had throughout that game, or you know, throughout that first half anyway, they only had 45% of possession. They didn't complete too badly.
No, they didn't. No,
you know, I think it was 17-22 or 17-23 in that first half. So it was a hell of a lot better than last week, because they were 7-17 last week in the first half.
But even their errors, across the board,
just the error total
wasn't too bad.
The problem is, it's where the errors occur. It's giving Melbourne too many opportunities in your own half, in the Gold Coast half. And once the second half come around, they just got ramrodded.
Yeah, they did. I mean, and you know, again, I don't want to keep pumping up Queensland supporters, but Munster had a brilliant game in that game.
He was great. Asafa Solomona was massive.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. He was huge.
They just had too much power up front for the Gold Coast. They just could not handle Melbourne's big boppers.
No, and Melbourne has some huge boppers.
Fiu Masali, he's a monster. Even without Jesse Bromwich there, it's just crazy the amount of size that they've got up front. Like they play Brandon Smith a prop, for Christ's sakes.
Yeah.
Mm. He had the number 8 jersey on. Like it was just crazy. Yeah. The one thing, just before we sort of move on, the one thing that sort of irked me a little bit out of that game was just the absolute disrespect that Michael Ennis gave the Gold Coast 10 minutes into the second half, just coming out, just flatly saying, "Oh boy, I'd be really surprised if Cameron Smith needs to be out there any longer than he is now. Like he should be having an early shower," and you know, just totally disregarding what the Gold Coast. Yeah, okay, fair enough. They're not the greatest of talent and everything like that, but Cameron Smith's not going to want to come off. Like that's not in his DNA to sort of to be able to come out there and do that, and for him to just come out there and just flatly say, "Oh, Melbourne, they're going to kick the living, you know what, out of this Gold Coast. So, Cameron Smith doesn't need to be out there anymore." It's so disrespectful. And I don't care where the Gold Coast are at the moment. Like, they're not on the bottom of the ladder. It just sounded so condescending and disrespectful. And guess what? Cameron Smith played the whole frickin' game.
Yes, he did. Yeah, and he wouldn't do that kind of thing anyway.
It's not in his makeup, but that just really shit me off when I heard that. So condescending. And look, that might be just a little bit of the love for the Gold Coast about it, you know.
But you've got a
Gold Coast jersey, that just really got up my nose, just him being so I found it borderline disrespectful.
You got a fair point. I mean, there's nothing wrong with saying a play, you know, if they got a fair lead and you want to rest a play, you could say it. There's other ways to say it, but from what you're saying, because I didn't hear it, it sounds very nonchalant.
It was just the tone of voice that he used to say, oh, well, you may as well just rest everybody. You know,
yeah, so he's very nonchalant.
The Sunshine Coast Falcons will be able to beat this Gold Coast squad. Like, yeah, it's okay. Just, like, get out of here. Like, that really pissed me off about that. I just wanted the Gold Coast to sort of put together a little bit more effort in that game. Unfortunately, it's just against the red hot Melbourne at the moment. Yeah. And it didn't happen, and you know, and that just shows the class of Melbourne.
Unfortunately, then going to another Queensland side that didn't play well on Friday was the Brisbane Broncos.
It was a Friday night horror show
for all Queensland. But this was worse. At least Gold Coast looked like they were putting an effort in. Broncos 48-0 against the Tigers. Did not look like they were putting any effort in from what I looked at. And if they did, it was definitely not on defense.
No, well, it couldn't be defensive. Well, getting 48 points put on you.
By Tigers. I mean, I'm not, this is not against the Tigers, but you know, they're not the team to beat this year, but yeah, man,
They're a mid-table side. Yeah. Like, you know, we're getting to the point of the season now where your record sort of speaks for who you are.
Yeah, that's true.
And they're a mid-table team, but you know that they put a hurting on two of the three Queensland teams at the moment. They put a hurting on the Cowboys a few weeks ago in the first half.
Yeah.
And obviously North Queensland sort of come back a little bit better in that second half. But this was just 26-0 at half time.
Yeah.
And right before the half, that debacle of a short dropout that only went 20 odd meters, and Luciano Leilua just plucked it out of the air, does a spin move, and has got nobody in front of him. And you can see Xavier Coates just looking, just going, oh no. And he just runs into the in goal and scores. You're like, oh, that just puts an exclamation point on what the Broncos are sort of going through.
His look too. Just a cheeky look. You can't blame him. I mean, it was awesome, but yeah. unfortunately, it's just Broncos. It's just another compounding thing on just their entire season. They keep trying to look for answers, and no senior players are really giving it to them.
They ain't coming. And that's the thing I just sort of wanted to bring up. Like, this is the sort of game where, you know, your experienced guys that are, and they've got a few of them. You know, Milford's played a ton of first grade. Darius Poyd's played a ton of first grade. Ben Teo, who they brought in to the squad. Like, I don't know what he started the game. He only ended up playing 30 minutes.
Yeah.
He made 17 tackles and 2 hit-ups to 20 meters. Like, what is that? Like, here's a guy that they've brought in there. Now they've got him starting. And he's only playing 30 minutes of game time as a second rower. Like, that just doesn't make any sense to me.
I agree.
There are guys like Tevita Pengai Jr. and Payne Huss. This is the sort of game. Yeah, okay, granted, they haven't played a lot of first grade game, but this is the kind of game where when the hard meters have got to be made, they're the two guys that have got to be standing up.
Yeah.
And where were they at?
Yeah. I don't know. I felt your boy, Tevita Pengai, went a little bit missing, but I thought Payne Huss at least tried.
That's what he does.
I get that, but I thought Payne Huss at least tried. I'm not saying he didn't have a great game, but he at least tried. Like, he usually does. He's consistently tries, but
he plays a lot of minutes, and I think that's sort of to the detriment of their team that plays.
Yeah.
You know, he plays those almost Jason Tamalolo type minutes, you know, 65, 70 plus minutes. It's whether or not he can be effective for that whole time, and whether or not you need to dial it back, even if you dial it back to say 60 minutes. And you can get more quality rather than quantity out of him.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's, I mean, there's a lot that they've got to do, so they're just going from bad to worse. Next game was the Dragons and Bulldogs. It was entertaining. It ended up being the Dragons winning 28-22. coming back from a 20-10 halftime deficit. So,
look, that was a real seesaw sort of game. Yeah. It's Dragons got on top early, and then Canterbury sort of come back, and they hit back with three sort of unanswered tries in 13 minutes of the first half. And, sort of watching bits and pieces of that game, and then just sort of checking out highlights and stuff like that. They looked like they had St. George shot.
Well, I thought the very first try that went to Matt Dufty in like 20 seconds. I thought, holy hell, this is going to be a cricket score. And then
what's this going to be? It was just, it was crazy. And that was such a good try too.
Oh, yeah,
the way that it sort of, that Canterbury sort of stuck with it, hit back, took the lead and looked good.
Yeah, they looked great at halftime.
And then it sort of, it sort of fell apart, in that last 15 minutes. For the Bulldogs, 65th minute, St. George hadn't scored, in 40 odd minutes until that last 15 minutes, and then the exclamation point once again, put on the Corey Norman try with just the absolute horrendous hospital ball, not so much hospital ball, but such a shocking ball to Marcelo Montoya, had to try and pick it up off his legs. It comes off his shin, goes straight to Corey Norman. He runs right past him in the final, 90 seconds of the game? And it's 22-all. And he goes in, you go in and you lose a game like that. That must have been heartbreaking for the Bulldogs to let that game slip away that late in the contest.
Yeah.
And think, we're a real chance, of maybe either pushing Golden Point or getting the win in regulation.
Just quickly on the Dragons, where is I personally think he needs to move on. Where do you think Cameron McGinnis is going? Because clearly Ben Hunt is locked in that position of hooker, and that's great because he is playing good. So I just don't know what it means.
As long as Cam McGinnis doesn't forget how to play dummy half, I think a team out there that's looking.
Bulldogs
for a dummy half. That's right, Canterbury, team that they played. I think that would be a super fit.
I do too.
He's getting the minutes that he wants. He's proven that he's an 80 minute player.
Yeah.
So they desperately need, a high quality or a quality dummy half, and he would be, that would be good for them. That'd be taking a little bit of a bit of salary cap and player pressure. Positional pressure off St. George, that they don't have to make these calls of, we've got Ben Hunt there. We're set at him at number nine. Now we're going to have to play McGinnis at 13. It just takes that selection headache out of it.
They have Jack DeBellin coming back too. So,
exactly.
And this is probably what I think Bulldogs we need to do. I am taking this off 360, but once someone said it, I sort of agreed straight away. I think it was Paul Kent. But his contract runs out because I ended up looking it up because I thought, he's just a perfect fit there. His contract runs out at the end of next year, so 2021. But there's no reason why Bulldogs can go to these teams like St. George and say, hey, we'll take his contract off you. You pay, say, $200,000 or $300,000 of it, and we'll take the rest. So they save money and they don't have to worry about it.
Value for money.
So like that, they don't then take the brunt of the contract off the Bulldogs. He gets game time. Everybody wins because then they get salary cap relief. I think.
No, that's right. Yeah, the win-win situation.
Well, I think Bulldogs have to do it purely because they don't want to get like that Nick Kotrick signed for 3 years for 1.8, which isn't too bad, but they don't want to get in the same position they did last time where they pay overs for everybody.
Right.
And then they have back-ended contracts. They need to get some,
I think they'd be a bit smarter this time and not back-end contracts.
Oh, hopefully. They're going to have to pay.
Well, that's a la what happens in the NBA at the moment. These players get these massive contracts. On the front end, they don't look too bad. The last couple of years of their contract, highlighted by CP3. the last year of his contract, that if he stays at Oklahoma City, is going to be like $45 million. Yeah, that's obviously getting off topic and off sport, but yeah, that's a prime example of these back end of contracts.
Yeah,
it's good for the team that's signing him at the moment, and Houston was the one that signed him to that deal, and now he's been traded. Houston would be rubbing their hands together. It's like, sweet, we didn't have to pay that now.
But in the league aspect, yeah, I think they can't do back end contracts. They probably have to pay overs for some people. I get that, but they're going to have to look for. Like, I think even
they've
Paul
got to look for but if they do that, that means they do have to look for value then.
Well, Cameron McGinnis is a perfect fit, I think, in the nine. They need a one, and they need a six or a seven as well. I don't know where. I just don't think DWZ's great. He could play anywhere in the back line. I just think they need a one and a six or a seven. Thing is, I don't know. I mean,
they've got Hopewadi there as well. That's a makeshift fullback as well. Like, he's not. Really, I don't think he's the right fit. He's not really a fullback. He can play fullback.
Yeah.
But he's not. I don't think he's quite. He's quite there as being a high class fullback. Like he's a center. Yeah. Hmm. He's a big body, but he's shown his quality as a center. So you get, and like you said, Watini Zalesniak. He's the same thing. He's a solid fullback.
Yeah,
but he's played tests in New Zealand.
Well, I guess we bring up coaches later, but I guess it's up to Barrett what he wants to do since he signed there for 3 years starting next year. So
yeah, well that's right. Yeah, that's at least one coach one coach off the market.
Next game was another entertaining game, I thought, because well, watched every 80 minute, I was thinking, what the hell is going to happen in this game?
Oh my god, this game, I almost had a heart attack.
With South and the Knights. The Knights blew out really quickly to a 14-0 halftime lead, and I thought, well, okay, like, we didn't have to start watching the game, but I could see where your heart attack came from.
They were cruising at 20-0 with 13 minutes to go. They were just absolutely cruising, and then they just decided to piss, shit, and spew all over themselves. And if Tom Burgess could hang on to a ball, they would have Newcastle would have lost this game.
Yep.
If Tom Burgess had scored that try and not knocked it on, not once but twice in trying to put the ball down, and then I read an article. I think it was the next day that he was absolutely baffled and miffed at how he didn't get awarded that try, and saying, I've seen them given. It's just like, no, I've not seen them given, because when he was reaching his arm over, a Newcastle Knight had knocked it out of his hands. Mm. So there's one knock on. Okay, granted, it might have been, it could go each way. It's knocked out by a Newcastle player, so there's a knock on. But as he's planting the ball comes out, and you could see it clearly bobble before it hits the ground. So that's a knock on. So I don't know where he's getting this make-believe of I've seen those tries given before. It's just like, no, sorry, I don't think so. But aside from that and nearly having a, nearly having a heart attack during that game. Newcastle, looked clean and crisp for most of that game, and South looked extremely disjointed in attack. A few positional sort of changes in the back line as well, with no Mitchell there, so they sort of had a bit of a back line reshuffle. So whether that had anything to do with it as well, but just an avalanche of possession and points. To finish off that game.
Yeah.
And, Newcastle sort of had done well to hang on to it, and it had an extremely bizarre finish as well. I don't know what you thought about that.
With the
referee pointing at the 35, around the 35-meter line saying, here's your mark, and they're packing the scrum five meters in front of where he's saying.
That's exactly right.
And it's like, no, here is your mark. Yep. I'm not blowing time off, and that 10 seconds runs off the clock, and then they're all blowing up. They're all blowing up at the referee. It's just like, no, the ball went out on the 35-meter mark. I'm saying here's where the mark is, and you're packing the scrum 5 meters in front of me to try and get a cheeky little, you know, to try and get a cheeky advantage. And I, you know, applaud the referee for doing that.
Yeah, no, I agree. They kept shifting forward, You can see it clearly. You can see it when they had the wide shot.
The referee just stood exactly where it was, and you see that they were hardly even in the picture until you got a widescreen shot of it. And it's just like, what are they doing up there?
Yeah, they moved up there. I completely agree. They were off. The ref did what they're supposed to do. You didn't have to call time off. They packed the scrum where he pointed to.
Yes, they packed the scrum, but they packed the scrum 5 meters in front of where Mark was. So he's well within his rights to let time keep running.
Exactly. And I mean, hindsight aside, there wasn't even a chance that you could say they were going to score anyway. So.
Well, that's right. They had one play, but if you go by the previous 13 minutes, like they were actually playing some cohesive football.
Yeah, that's true.
And it took them 67 minutes to play some cohesive and coherent football. And they just, they come home with the wettest of sails, but just couldn't quite get over the mark.
Next game was the, they called it the game of the round, but it was all right. The Manly are getting over Parramatta 22-18. I guess it shocked me at the start. I mean, they blew out again another halftime sort of 22-4, and I thought I should have just learned from the other games. I thought, okay, you know, this is going to be sort of a blowaway, but then Parramatta decided to come back.
Well, for me, yeah, I guess it was a tale of two halves, really.
Yeah.
Exactly. You know, Manly sort of come out and blew them off the park, not so much in the first 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, three super soft tries that you just don't see with, you know, fresh defenders in the first 20 minutes of a game. Like that's as fresh and as fit as you're going to be in a game in that first 20 minutes. And some of the tries that Parramatta let in, I don't know what they were doing. They had just an absolute shocker in all aspects. Even in the second half when they're trying to chase points, like they're still, granted, they got back into the contest, but they were just so sloppy, and both teams were getting really sloppy by the end of the game. I think it sort of popped up on the screen there that in the first 20 minutes of that second half, there was 10 errors.
Yeah,
by both sides. So it was like, all right, you know, we're getting a bit sloppy here, but you know, Manly, you know, a super gutsy effort.
Yeah. Their completion rate was getting worse towards the end there as well.
Yeah, you know. That's right. Yeah, those percentages were dropping as time kept going on. Yeah. I don't know what you thought of the strip or non-strip of Wonga Blake, and I think it was on Marty Tapau, and he pretty much had an 80-meter try.
Disallowed?
No, it was allowed.
Allowed.
I don't think it should have been allowed. I think... Yes, it looked like that Marty Tapau was about to offload, but whether he pulled the arm back in a lot, and Wonga Blake just ripped it straight out of his hands.
Yeah, no.
With another player around his legs.
Yeah.
Like you just can't take it out of their hands. You've got to wait for at least a motion of an offload, or wait for the offload to actually come. I think he just pulled it straight out of his hands.
Yeah.
And that's the reason why he got it, you know, 80 metres, not so much uncontested, because he had a couple of people chasing him and he ended up scoring in the corner at the other end. But I really didn't like the call of, you know, the non-call of it. That should have been a strip.
Well, they had their second player there, like you said. You can strip the ball if he's by himself.
He plucked it straight out of his hands, and you just simply can't do that.
You can if it was one-on-one, but that's about it.
Exactly, that's right.
And it wasn't.
But even if you're sort of looking to offload, when you got another bloke around your legs, you have to wait for him to offload it, or you play at the arm, and then you make him make the mistake rather than just pulling it straight out of his hands. Like, that's the problem I have with it.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with that. I mean, it was more, I guess I was sort of, pleased with Manly that they could defend their sort of lead, because obviously Eels were coming strong, but they didn't score any points in that second half. So,
that's right. Interesting. Not so much they sat, they sat on the lead, but they capitalized on what Parramatta gave them in that first half, and they did enough to hold on.
Yeah, and they did. They did enough to hold on, and they were great. I mean, I thought they were going to win anyway, but they were great. They were a lot better than they've ever played, I guess, without the players like Tom Dravojevic and that. So,
well, with the key injuries and obviously Aiden Fanua Blake suspended as well. The personnel that they have out.
He's back this week.
It's, I mean, gutsy effort, and for me, Parramatta chasing points. But they didn't show a lot of patience. That's all. I think that was it, and that led to a lot of that sloppy. I think they ended up having 15 errors for the whole game, and that's just too many.
Well, the good thing is they've got Mitchell Moses back this week, and
that's right. And so
Fanua Blake.
Fanua Blake finally. took the flu needle, and Moses and Ferguson are back for Parramatta this week. So, they'll look to bounce back from there. Like they didn't really go to that left edge either a lot. They went there a couple of times in that first half, but Jennings ended up getting the only four pointer for them in the first half. But it just looked very sloppy that game, especially towards the end.
Next game was a first Sunday game. The Sharks, poor Warriors, but I guess another big score, 46-10 over the Warriors. Great for Sharks. I mean, they haven't shown a lot this year that I thought, for the team that they haven't really showed a lot this year. But they did in that game.
Yeah, they've been super inconsistent this year, Cronulla. Look, they looked, they obviously looked a lot better, especially after having 56 points put on them by Penrith last week. They looked very competent in attack. They blew New Zealand off the park in the first half, and that's just too hard to recover from. Like 24-4 at the half, a sneaky try. I think it was to Wade Egan at the end of the game there to sort of, to put not so much respectability on the score, but to get New Zealand that 10 points. Yeah. Both teams' handling were horrendous.
Yeah.
I think the Warriors were 63%, Cronulla 68%. So for Cronulla to be able to put on 46 points with, a fairly poor sort of completion rate kind of, gives you that state of mind where the Warriors are at the moment.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to have having those guys head back to New Zealand now. Ignatius Parsi, Ken Mamalo, David Fusatua are all heading back home to New Zealand. Yep. So their roster is going to be extremely stretched and very depleted for the meantime, unless they can get some sort of answers between the Australian and New Zealand government, whether or not they can either bring family over here or they're allowing them to sort of travel back and forth from New Zealand.
Before we move on to the last game, I just think a shining light, I guess, in that Sharks team this year has been the winger, Sione Katoa. He's been consistently brilliant this year. Yeah, he's – I mean, you're right. They're too inconsistent the whole year, but he's consistently getting high run meters, 230 meters in that game. He got two tries, I guess, against the Warriors, but he's been very consistent this year. I like the way he plays.
Is he on top of the try scorers?
Yes, he is.
I think it's him and I think Norfoluma might be one try behind him, he's leading the league in tries at the moment. So at least they're getting him the ball, and that's something that can be fairly consistent for him, that he can get over the line as much as what he is at the moment. So they're dealing with injuries to key players as well. Fifita, Matt Moylan. That's not handy for him as well. The super inconsistent, but this was a good performance. Especially after having 56 put on him by Penrith last week, you know, to come out and put, you know, 46 points on the Warriors. All you can do is play who's in front of you, and you know that's what they did, and that's the Warriors' first loss at the Central Coast this year.
Last game was the Panthers too good for the Cowboys, 22-10. The Panthers end up, it was their second half, their effort in second half was obviously brilliant. That's why they come away.
Too classy.
Yeah.
For North Queensland.
Yeah.
The first half there was some super promising signs for the Cowboys.
Oh yeah.
If they didn't let in that dirt easy try in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah,
Tabuai Fido's try in the first half was unreal.
Get me wrong, it's you know, unfortunate, you know, the $1 million Valentine Holmes isn't there, but I don't see that Tabuai Fido being anywhere else but fullback in that line.
No, that's right. And the more, and this is a good thing for him too, the more exposure that he gets at the fullback, and you know how he can organize a defensive line and do those sort of intangible things as a good fullback without Val being there is only going to be good for him in the long run.
But I mean, the only problem is that is you paid $1 million for a player to be on a wing or a center.
Yeah, I know, but it's
good,
but
he's,
I mean, the young kid that played at 5'8", Dejan Assi, I thought he had a solid game as well. Like he looked good. Like he's got a good decent sort of left boot on him.
19.
In replacement of Scotty Drinkwater, who whether or not the amount of KFC that he had the week before, the amount of drop ball that he had his fingers in that bucket of chicken last week. I think Drinkwater's got an MCL issue, so he could be out for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Which just puts more pressure on the Cowboys halves. So.
He was. I mean, he's only 19, so.
Solid. But he's a big unit, too. Solid. For a 5'8", like. He's a solid kid. So, yeah.
Panthers are too classy.
But too many errors with the Cowboys at the end of the game. You know, trying to chase points, and they were up to their eyeballs in this game, and then just sort of got away from in the last sort of 15 minutes or so, and Penrith just proved too classy.
And I think they're really. They're just one of the sides. They are a premiership contending side this year. They are just going great guns. I mean, we've talked up Coruscant, but even Nathan Cleary had a great game that game. They're just from 1-7.
He controlled that game beautifully. Cleary, he was excellent.
James Fisher-Harris ended up getting 246 meters. So yeah, they're going brilliantly. I wasn't sure if there was something wrong with Tamau, but he only played half a game. Was there anything wrong with him? He only played 37 minutes. We might be just needed a rest. I don't know, but he didn't play a lot in that game.
Not sure about Jimmy. I didn't hear anything about whether he failed a HIA or anything like that, whether or not he was just might have been a bit gassed. Awesome. They thought they had the game in hand, so I watched the first half, but had to listen to the second half on the radio,
he's named this week, so it's just, it was interesting he didn't play. Like, maybe they thought they had the game in hand, so I guess still, I mean, Penrith, I think they are definite contenders this year. Hugely, I think they. I don't think it's without a doubt they are. So,
absolutely.
That'll do for the games for this week. We look at our studs and duds of the week. Did you have a? Well, I was actually thought you were. We'll start with duds, and I thought you were going to have a go at Michael Ennis, but I don't know if he's your dud of the week.
He's my dud of the week every week. I just
don't like him, do you?
I have a large disdain for Michael Ennis as a player and as a commentator. My stud and dud both came from the same game. So, you know, all the way back on Thursday night, my dud of the week is Josh Morris. with that flop that he tried to do.
Yes. Yeah.
Was disgraceful.
Yeah.
Absolutely disgraceful.
Yeah.
He just bumps into Rapana and then he falls down worse than what a soccer player would after being grazed on the shin pad by somebody and then holding their face as if they're about to die and their skin is melting. It was horrible. And is that what we're doing now? Like you're down, you're not used to playing from behind, and then you're just going to go in and give the performance of a lifetime, and hope that the academy picks it up and think you're going to get best supporting actor or something like that. It was disgraceful.
I'll go on the back of that. Yeah.
And the funny thing was, he actually got the penalty. The penalty, and Canberra challenged it and said, we're not doing that. That's not happening. And that's where the challenge is good.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly
when you don't want to waste your challenge. Because if Canberra had wasted it earlier and Morris had have gotten away with that, that changes the game.
Yeah. That's true.
You can see
there's
under
no way he's getting away with it.
No, you can see under replay that it was just a total flop.
Yeah. Yeah.
One of the worst performances and worst flops I've seen in a while.
I'll echo on that. That was one of my duds of the week, definitely. So the same game was the start of the week, did you say?
Oh, just Josh Papali.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. The try that he scored near the end of the game just went through a gaping hole in the Roosters' defense, which you don't generally see a lot of. Like they don't generally sort of let props get through, but they just don't have defensive problems like they did, and they fell into a heap in that second half, the Roosters. But you know, Papali showed his intent pretty much on the first hit up of the second half.
Yeah.
And he got into it a little bit with Angus Crichton too. He was struggling in a tackle. I think Papali thought, you know, he's thrashing around a little bit, got a little bit of an elbow to the face.
Yeah.
Papali sort of hung on and they got into a little bit of a tussle, like not too much to sort of write home about, but
you just
tell that he was locked in and he was showing his intent a lot, especially in that second half.
My start of the week goes to debut guy for the start. I guess the start was Billy Walters. Played 80 minutes, played out of position at number six for the Tigers, but scored a try and just was very, just complimented Benji Marshall very well, and that's why he's been named again with Benji Marshall this week. He seemed to be everywhere where he needed to be. He didn't have to do much because Benji was just being Benji. He just had to run the show, but he was great. I thought he was just, you know, he was a dummy half at Melbourne, but he looked pretty comfortable on the six. So,
oh, he's a half for sure. He's not a dummy half. You can see that he's got creativity in him. I thought he had a terrific game. I didn't really sort of like the fact that Kevy, his dad, was commentating that game.
No,
I don't want to poo-poo over it.
No,
but you know, a lot of people have sort of come out and said, "Oh, it's so great to hear Kevy commentating on his kid." I don't care how professional you are, and you know, he scored that try and it was terrific. The point that I want to make is, what happens if he gets hurt and hurt badly? What happens if the situation, what happened with Corey Oates, you know, we sort of didn't touch on that during that game. What happens if that's Billy Walters and his dad is in the commentary and then there's all this stuff coming out that he could have a compound fracture of the femur?
Which obviously didn't happen,
but I don't care how professional you are. When things like that happen, and it's rugby league, it's a collision sport, shit happens. If something, you know, bad like that happens, or even if, you know, if somebody, what happens if it's the shoe on the other foot? What happens if Joey Leilua coat hangers in that situation, somebody code hangs him. You know what I mean? Because gets foul play on him or hits him hard or takes his legs out from underneath him when he's kicking or something like that. Kevy's got to try and keep that under his hat, you know, and try and be professional. Just, you can't put people in that position.
I agree. Well, you can, but so like in saying
clearly
that.
Clearly they did.
Well, of course they did. But what I'm getting at is I agree. I really don't think Kevy Walters is a great commentator. I don't mind him. I don't, Coach Morones. I just don't think I don't think he thinks before he speaks. I agree with you. You shouldn't be commentating your own son unless you're bipartial. Like, if I give an example of Phil Gould, I know you're not the biggest Phil Gould fan.
I've said that for a long time. Like, that's a conflict of interest.
But he was very impartial.
No, but yeah, that's the word.
No, I agree.
Because he's professional.
Panthers director. That's right. Exactly. He was Panthers director.
He shouldn't even be in the commentary booth.
You're right. He shouldn't be in there, but he was impartial.
That's a conflict of interest.
Yeah, I agree. Because he could just, it's like getting season ticket members. Say, oh, these Panthers are going great. You should go and buy buy season tickets for them or memberships or something like that. So I agree.
Yeah, but that's right. It just can't happen. Like Gould for a long time, and I'm not the biggest fan of Bill Gould as commentary either. Like the back and forth that he has with Rabbits is getting old. It's been old for a long time.
That's Rabbits getting old.
Don't start me, Rabbits. Don't start me. It's like, oh, Gould, shut
that's
up.
That's why I've haven't watched Channel 9 for a long time.
I can't watch Fox Sports.
That's our stud and duds of the week. We'll finish up talking about what the song was about at the start. Basically, that another one biting the dust, but just the coaching. I wouldn't even call it carousel yet, but just the coaches that have gone and I guess who may come onto the scene. I mean, we've already talked about Barrett. Barrett's confirmed. Dean Pay's gone, so Barrett's confirmed 3-year deal starting 2021. We'll move up to your boys, straight up to the Cowboys. It was Paul Green himself, I guess.
He's instigated it, and it looked like it'd be on the cards for a little bit. So they come to a mutual agreement to part ways. After this week.
I mean, I know bits and pieces of what you think about him, but I did like hearing that he said he was happy to have that one more week just to have that with the young guys before he left. So I don't know. I just feel like he ended on a great note. He didn't end on like a bitter note. That's possibly going to happen to Seabold, but
that's right. Yeah, we can get to him a little bit later too. But, Greeny, just reading a couple of articles and stuff that are on the Fox Sports website, and Greeny himself sort of seems to think that when they weren't going so well that he might have been a little bit sort of too intense, with his attitude and coaching style, you can see it written all over his face as well. Just the way, especially in the last couple of weeks, when they were getting blown out by the Tigers a couple of weeks ago, like he was furious. To me, I just look back on Greeny's tenure as being as successful, 7 years as you could probably get. The one thing that's sort of damning a little bit is, his win percentage is 52% as a whole at the Cowboys, but without Thurston, it's 35%. So you take that what you will. In 7 years, as a resume for a 7-year coach, I think you'd be pretty happy with this. Yeah. You've won 2 Nines titles.
Yep.
Which once again, take with that what you want. They've made 2 grand finals. They've won a premiership. Made that second grand final in 2017, just against all the odds. And obviously getting railroaded by the Storm, but they had to get there. He's won a World Club Challenge, in 2016. That's a pretty damn good resume. That Greeny's had up there.
And to me, the biggest thing that he's wanted, North Queensland's away from a lot of things. You know, we are. We're just away from a lot of things. To me, the biggest thing I took out of his tenure, so to speak, players wanted to go and play there. You know?
No, that's right.
You live in Sydney. Okay, you live in Sydney. You live in Brisbane. I get all that sort of. But, like, North Queensland, we are away from a lot of things. So, you know, it's not the most appealing to certain young players and all that, but he got players to go there or stay there.
The only people that you've got chasing you around the place is the reporters from the Townsville Bulletin. So, you know, it's not as if you've got guys from the Sydney Morning Herald and then Fox Sports journalists and all that sort of chasing after you like you would in Sydney or Brisbane.
And so, the players get left alone up there, to what I hear.
That's exactly right. How often do you see, you know, any sort of big stories or any big news on, you know, on Fox Sports News and Fox League when it comes to the Cowboys, even when they're playing well? Like, they're just not heard of a whole lot, you know, by, I guess, you know, a Sydney-centric media centre. That's the NRL.
Yeah.
I think Brisbane are getting a little bit sort of too much exposure for what they're going through at the moment. But, you know, like I said, I've always liked Greeny. I love the way that he stepped straight in, and you could see that the talent was there when when Neil Henry was up here coaching. Neil Henry just couldn't get them over the line. You know, Greeny comes in, new coaching structures, and, you know, within 2 years, they've won a premiership. And you know, Neil Henry had just as much talent to work with up here as what Greeny did.
Yeah.
And yet, Greeny comes in and pretty much has fairly instant success. So, you know, I'll always look upon Greeny as, you know, up here as fondly as what I could any other coach. Except, besides Graham Murray. Like, you know, Graham Murray up here should have been, you know, absolutely unfireable and unsackable, you know, getting the Cowboys to their first finals in 04 and a grand final in 05. Yeah, he should have been absolutely unsackable. But, you know, that's just the way that the game is. But, yeah, I've always liked Greeny. I thought it was a great pickup when he did come up here in 2014, and hopefully he gets a good gig, later on. Like, he, you know, he's obviously got plenty to offer, and
I think he'll just sit back. If I was him,
watch the offers roll in.
Yeah, just have a break and see what's going to happen with all the other sides. So with him,
apparently he's still going to stay up here in Townsville for a little bit as well too.
Yeah. Yeah, I would. I mean, yeah, there's no rush, you know. He's just got to wait for his management team to sort of come to him. I guess then on the back of that is the obvious question, who goes there?
Look, there's that article that's on Fox Sports at the moment that's got, you know, sort of 9 coaching candidates that could come up here to North Queensland. I don't believe a lot of them are very viable. Obviously the first one off the cuff is to me, I thought the first option should be Jeff Toovey. But in this article, the first option, and whether or not these are the best options or not, if they go in that sort of order, but they've come out and said Anthony Griffin. So
he's understood to be the favorite according to Daily Telegraph. So.
Yeah, so I think, you know, Griffin's been doing little bits and pieces. He's doing bits and pieces with Fox Sports, and I think he was on the radio at the ABC for a little bit as well. He's sort of a flat sort of, you know, plateaued sort of guy. Like, he doesn't really – he's not in the TV or radio business with the way that he sort of, you know, goes about his analysis and stuff like that. So I think that could be a good signing. You know, people like Jason Riles and Craig Fitzgibbon, they're not coming up here. They're not going to hire Dean Pay or Stephen Kearney. The former Iggy Park coach, Christian Wolf, I thought was an interesting choice because he was the coach of the under-20s up here for a while. So at least he knows, he knows the lay of the land, and he took over, Newcastle for a little bit there after Brownie got the arse I think Nathan Brown could do well up here as well. He's not in this article.
No, but there's you're right that he's another
John
one.
John Cartwright as well. John Cartwright's not in this article either, and I think he could offer up something well, but you know, something that's sort of come to light over the last couple of hours as we're doing this is apparently Kevin Walters' management team has express emailed his resume up to the North Queensland Cowboys board, so. That'll be very interesting to see whether or not they want to take him seriously, that he wants to be a club coach and not just be the origin coach.
The name that you haven't read yet that I keep reading more and more into while we've been doing this is Sean Wayne, the current England head coach.
Former Premiership Wigan coach.
He did express an interest, actually, when I read into it more for an assistant gig at the Cowboys. But now the Green's gone, you know, is he going to be in line for that top job? Because what I read into him is that he applied for the Knights job before it eventually went to Adam O'Brien. But he has a big, big culture on blooding young players or paying, and I'm saying young, like 12 and 14 year olds. To have organised webinars to help young players coming through. But I just think it's probably the thing is what you just said, Wigan, having a winning culture that I think the Cowboys, you know, unfortunately have gone away from since JT.
Well, in the last couple of years, the Cowboys haven't been that terrific. But, I mean, he's been super with the Cherry and Whites over there in England. And, they're a monster club in Wigan. They're an absolute monster club. I think they've made three grand finals in a row or two. They might have had, a couple of grand finals in a row. I mean, I just remember when Matty Bowen went over there and essentially left North Queensland. They win a premiership pretty much the next year. Matty Bowen goes over there to Wigan. They make a grand final. I'm pretty sure it was 2015. They lose that grand final. Matty Bowen essentially retires, and then the next year Wigan makes a grand final and wins. Being a massive Matty Bowen fan, I wanted him to get that premiership, whether or not it was with the Cowboys or just something, just to have that premiership winner. On his resume, it was unfortunate that he retired and then Wigan gets the win. Pretty sure it was it was the year after he retired from all sort of first grade competition. But Sean Wayne was the coach there.
Yep.
And it just it's mean like some Sean of the, Wayne some also of the guys that he's
he also coached a couple of those well a lot of those Canberra players, John Bateman, Ryan Sutton, George Williams. So
that's right.
I just think, it's not a bad name. I mean, there's a lot of names getting thrown. Yeah, it's not a bad one to have there. I if Kevy doesn't
sure
get it.
I feel like the weather up here coming from England.
If Kevy doesn't get it, because that's who I think, honestly, I think it's going to go to now that, I'd love to see Craig Fitzgibbon, but I think you're right about this. He's not going to come from Sydney.
He's just.
Everybody rates him hugely.
Yeah. He's just not leaving the Roost. I just don't see it. I could be wrong, but I just don't see it. He's been an assistant there for a little while now. He's ingrained, he's ingrained in that Roosters, that red, white, and blue there. It'd be good to see him get a first grade gig. I just don't think it will be the Cowboys.
I think if it's not Kevin Walters, I agree, it's possibly going to be Tuvey. It's just a feeling more than anything. So
they just need to instill a little bit of defensive steel in them, and I think the two guys that are on this list is Anthony Griffin and I'd totally forgotten that he would essentially be on the market, but the first person I thought of was Jeff Tuvey.
Well, Griffin is, he Panther said he had a boring game because, while the attack wasn't there, his defensive discipline approach. So.
And attack, whether you want to say, it's the old conundrum that, when you defend better, then your attack doesn't have to be as brilliant because you're holding teams to lower scores.
You're not having to tackle so much.
But if you've got naturally talented attacking players, then the attack will just come natural. And if you have a decent attacking, you know, assistant, if you want to have an assistant coach that could just wholly and solely focus on attack, then you allow Anthony Griffin to sort of instill those defensive qualities, like what Adam O'Brien has done with Newcastle. Like, Newcastle have been terrific defensively for most of this year.
Yeah,
you know, a couple of blips on the radar, but that they have been one of the toughest teams to crack this season.
Yeah,
and you put it down a lot of it to Adam O'Brien.
As much as
I didn't like them giving Nathan Brown the arse, but that's, I mean, he's not on this list either. And I think Nathan Brown could sort of come up here and do a similar sort of job as what he did with Newcastle, you know, build them from the ground up.
The thing is that, like, I'll go through and name them now. The thing is that, to me, by the end of the year, there's going to be so many coaching jobs available. I'll throw it out there and already say, I think surely the Broncos.
Seabold, from what all reports are saying, he's essentially been given the rest of the season, and he's got to win 5 games.
And there's a new report coming out that Chris Johns, they had an annual general meeting. Chris Johns, who's a shareholder, was not happy with that meeting because he wanted a few questions that were curtailed, so to speak. So I can't see Seabold staying. Even if he wins all 10 games, it'd be very – well, if he could, he might stay there. But I don't see that. I would say the Dragons –
even them just winning 5, they just think that's a bit rough. Even they're giving him this, essentially, if the reports are true, the ultimatum of win 50% of your next 10 games. And then some people are even saying even if he does win 5 of the next 10, they might not make the finals, and it could be his job anyway.
But then you've got to pay
him out 3 years of salary.
Yeah.
And then you've got to go into the coaching market again. Like, that's not good business, is it?
Well, Paul Green's the natural successor there, if that's the case. So, but you're right, you have to pay it. So then I would say Dragons. I would say Mary's position is still up in the air. Paul McGregor. I'm thinking towards the end of the year. I don't know who's going to go there, but I just think his position's up in the air, personally. I don't know what you think.
His position is looking a bit more secure than what it was, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago. Yeah,
I agree. You know, I just
4 or 5 weeks ago, it looked like he was very much on the outer, but they put together decent performances. So you could go 50-50.
Sharks with John Morris. Another place Paul Green could possibly go to, since he was a former halfback.
No, that's right. I've heard sort of, you know, even in the last 24 hours since the Green, mutual parting of ways, shall we say, he wasn't sacked. Is Johnny Morris the right guy for Cronulla? So, and that's like we said earlier, they've been wildly inconsistent this year, and they've got key injuries. We understand most teams, you know, especially during this season, it's just a topsy turvy sort of season. And if you can stay healthy, then that's going to be, you know, to the greater good of your own side.
And the other one, I mean, it's obvious because he's not there anymore, is the Warriors. Who coaches the Warriors? That's right.
And there's swirlings around the Walker brothers.
Yeah, I did hear that for 1 year, but that hasn't come into fruition.
Well, the Warriors management and team come out straight away. Like, there was multiple news reports out there saying that yes, the Warriors have signed the Walker brothers I can't remember if it was the 1 year deal just to sort of prove themselves. And the Warriors just come straight out and said, no, absolutely false. That's not what we've done. So, I guess they're sort of keeping their options open. A lot of people have sort of said that they could go in there and essentially with very minor tweaks to that roster, have them winning football games.
But I agree. I just don't know who could go there. That's the thing. I just, like, who could go there in minor tweaks? Warriors are such a side, and it's probably because they're not in the Australian bubble, Well, they are at the moment, but like,
they are now.
Yeah, unfortunately, but like, I don't know who could. They never seem to get, and that's no fault of. It's probably because of where they are situated. They never seem to get one of those big name coaches there at all. Personally, I just, and they probably should. I don't know who, but they probably should get. You know, I don't know if the Walker brothers, as an experiment, would actually work.
And what have they got to lose?
Well, that's true. Just going back to the Cowboys, you know, Todd Payton's there at the moment. Todd Payton, apparently everybody in Townsville loved Todd Payton as an assistant coach there. He was had massive raps, apparently.
Well, that's right. So, what happens to Todd Payton, you know, if the Warriors do sign, you know, the likes of, or whether it's the Walker brothers or one of these coaching candidates, then what does Todd Payton want? Does he want out then? He's got the taste of being a first grade coach. Could he come to North Queensland? It's a situation at the moment where there is some good candidates out there, and there's too many good candidates for the amount of coaching jobs that there are out there. So there are going to be some guys that'll miss out. I think they're for the teams that are out there. I don't think you'll get quality if you're going to be hiring a new coach. Like, you realistically should get quality.
Realistically, sure, you're right. But yeah, I just brought up Todd Payton because everything I read about him and when he was coaching down the 20s and in the assistants there, massive Townsville, the Townsville hierarchy had massive raps on Todd Payton.
Yeah.
They still do, obviously. Sure. So, but that's like 6-7 teams that could possibly have new coaches next year, which is phenomenal. But
we've got another 10 weeks. Another 10 weeks to go in the season, and I guess we'll just have to sort of wait and see who can sort of pick up a little bit of form coming into the end of the year.
Well, that'll do it for this week's NRL podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Final Play Pod and on Facebook, obviously, which is Final Play Podcast. And also you can get our podcast everywhere, Spotify, Gimco. Podbean, pretty much everything else except a certain piece of fruit.
And not a plum.
Not a plum, no, definitely not a plum. We just had to talk about the coaches, I think, because it's such a, I mean, you've said it at the very first start of the song, but it's just a, it's phenomenal how many coaches, it's nearly half of the NRL competition, how many coaches could actually, possibly lose their job. And I don't even, just thinking about it, I don't think anybody's taken on the fact of how, you know, this year, this 2020 season has been, you know, it hasn't been great on coaches regardless of losing their jobs or what. So it's kind of been a bit harsh on them anyway, to an aspect.
Well, I guess we sort of had to expect the unexpected with this year. Like, that's the way that this year is going, and that's all you can do. You can't really sort of take this season as a normal type season. You know, you've got to expect it to be a little bit out there.
No, I agree. That's just this year in general. So that's how I'm finishing off. That's what I know. What I'm calling myself this week. I'd just want to say this is Jason over 2020 Smith, because I'm literally over 2020.
Oh,
I think everybody
my God.
Is.
I'm just so sick of this and the Rona and I'm sick of hearing the word COVID-19. I'm just sick of it. And and shout out to those guys down there in Melbourne and Victoria.
Yeah, unfortunately.
They're having to go back to major quarantine again.
Yeah, lockdown.
So, you know, it looks like as of this week, in certain areas of the CBD and I think it's the Mitchellshire down there, it's mandatory to wear face masks. So, you know, just sort of, you know, just like obviously we've said it before, just don't be a grub, you know. Wash your hands don't cough and sneeze on people. Like, you know, I don't think you're really asking too much of people. I really don't.
And it's not hard to keep your distance from people. I mean,
no, you exactly. Know. You know, whether it's people smell or anything like that, you know, you keep your distance from them. But it's just the.
Yeah, no, I agree. I do that all the time.
It's the society that we're in at the moment. Like, you know, interactions between human beings are getting, you know, more and more distance as we go along. So it's really not that hard. Have a look what we're doing right now. We're 400 kilometers apart. So,
yeah,
you know, it's
I'm
just...
glad we do this one occasion apart.
Yeah, awesome exactly. Yeah, no, it's your smell. Smell of that beer on you. That's what it is.
Of course it is. All right. Have a good week, everyone.
See ya.